Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'm happy now to welcome to the program Dan Abrams. He's the author of the new book, Man Down, Proof Beyond a Reasonable Doubt That Women Are Better Cops, Drivers, Gamblers, Spies, World Leaders, Beer Tasters, Hedge Fund Managers, and just about everything else. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks a lot. Great to be here.
So you are an attorney who, as you put it, are making a case for female superiority, which is a pretty crazy task to take on. Why did you take it on?
You know, I was kind of an accidental author on this. It's not like I went into this saying to myself, I've got to write a book about women and men. I mean, I've been, you know, I've hosted shows on MSNBC. I used to run MSNBC. I've been a legal analyst for a long time. I've never, you know, this is not my area of expertise. It just happened that I came upon some information, a couple of articles about women being better than men in various areas. I actually didn't believe some of what I saw. I said, you know, I want to know what the facts are. What's the evidence? What are they basing this on? And look, and some of what I initially found was anecdotal. And that's what I thought a lot of this would be. It's purely anecdotal. Someone saying, you know, I believe, or from what I've seen. But the truth is there's actually been a lot of studies done and a lot of research comparing men and women. And that's what this book is. This book is a fun compilation of proof that women are better than men in a variety of areas.
Some of the categories are a little marginal, like competitive eating. So,
yep.
For example, I'm not sure that being able to eat 10 pounds of meatballs in 10 minutes makes anybody better than anybody else. And,
well,
but I mean,
it may not make you a better human being, but there are competitions in this regard. And that's sort of the fun thing about the book, is that the book is a mix of topics that are really serious, like students and investors and police officers, et cetera, to the very light and frivolous, like women are better competitive eaters. But every chapter is backed up by studies and research. And in the competitive eaters category, first of all, there's some of the results. The fact that, as you can imagine, competitive eating is not in a particularly appealing sport, so to speak, for many women. Very few women enter the quote-unquote sport. And yet, there are a few who are really thriving in it. And there are some studies which offer some explanations for why women, in the end, might be better at it than men.
The ones that stood out to me the most were hedge fund managers and police, because those are such traditionally male areas, and there's still very few women in those. Let's start with hedge fund managers. How much better are women at this job? And
yeah.
Why do you think that is?
And I think this is one that really surprised me, and I think surprises a lot of people. 97% of the hedge fund managers out there are men. 3% are women. And yet, when you compare the results of the women to the men, the women do about, on average, 3% better than the men. So some people say, well, why is it then that all the richest hedge fund managers that I read about are men? And the answer is that's probably true, not just because there are more men in it, which is part of it, but it's also that the men tend to swing for the fences more, so to speak. Meaning, as investors and hedge fund managers, you find across the board that women tend to make smarter, more conservative, but on the whole getting better returns than the men. That means, however, that in using a sports cliche, that the men are swinging for the fences and striking out more. But it also means that they're the ones hitting those home runs. The women, on the other hand, are more consistently getting the, quote, singles and doubles, so that in the end they've got a better batting average. So if you're looking for more consistent returns, the studies show it's better to go with women than with men.
There's a funny little contradiction, which is that while women seem to be more conservative and risk-averse, they also, according to your book, are more aggressive and risk-taking gamblers.
Yeah, I mean, this area, I would say that the better way to describe that is this was a chapter on sports gambling in particular. And I think that the better way to look at it is women were smarter gamblers, meaning they weren't afraid to make the big bets. They were ready to make the big bets, but it seems that they were smarter in how and where they made them. So there's no question that across the board, it seems women are more risk-averse. And look, that's not to say that that's always a good thing. You know, wars have been won based on taking great risk. But when you're looking across the board at life in many ways, men tend to take a lot of unnecessary risks. I mean, there's, again, an interesting chapter on men getting hit by lightning more than women. 82% of lightning strikes in this country are on men. Why? Because, you know, look, the men are refusing to go in when there's a storm coming. They want to play that extra round of golf, or they want to keep fixing the antenna on the roof. When the women tend to say, you know what, there's a really big storm coming, we probably ought to go inside. So, you know, it's that the men are across the board taking greater risks. And that is being reflected in getting hit by lightning more, but also when it comes again to hedge fund managers and investors, lower returns across the board.
What about police? What's the female advantage there?
So this is a really interesting one. This is really twofold. I mean, if you look at it in the macro picture, the reason that women tend to be better police officers is, number one, they tend to be less corruptible, and number two, they're able to better diffuse a violent situation better. So some people say to me, come on, you know, I'd rather have a stronger person. No question, men are stronger than women on the whole. And a lot of people would say, well, I'd rather have a stronger police officer there. And the response is, well, really? If you can get someone to defuse the situation without any violence, wouldn't you rather have that than have someone who's strong and burly? And some people would say, well, isn't someone who's really strong going to lead to a greater chance of diffusing a violent situation? The studies say no. The studies say that women are able to better diffuse violent situations. It also means that police forces are getting sued less by women when women police officers are there, which means less taxpayer dollars going towards that. So there are a lot of advantages to having a women police officers. In fact, there are many places now around the world where the police forces have become so corrupt that the solution, literally the solution, has been hire more women for the force.
There's one thing that is, I think, conspicuously absent from your book, which kind of surprised me, is that women are really almost entirely absent as perpetrators of violent crime. Why didn't you put that in?
Because, look, part of this book was to talk about, I mean, that's sort of, you know, what people are, you know, this is sort of the worst of society, right? Who's less bad? This book was intended mostly to be, what are people, you know, better at? There's no question. And also I was looking to a lot of examples in this book were intended to be situations where people might be surprised. I don't think anyone would be surprised to hear that men are perpetrators of crime. I think anyone who would read that chapter would say, yeah, well, of course. I mean, that's not... There's nothing sort of particularly surprising about that finding.
Right.
So I think there were two reasons I probably didn't move forward. Number one, it was just sort of a who's less bad. And number two, I didn't think that it would be something where people would say, wow, that's really interesting. And that's what I was looking for in each one of the chapters.
This book is... I mean, it's for popular consumption. It doesn't go into great depth on any of the issues. The chapters are very short. And for this reason, I think you only touch on some of the real questions. And one of the real questions is, to what extent are these differences, you know, biological and evolutionary, and to what extent they are cultural? And I was wondering, in the many studies that you looked at, and it certainly is based on all kinds of studies, what countries... What citizens were studied, to what extent did they control for race and culture, for economic class, and so on?
Yep. So, you know, as I was working on Man Down, there were a whole different types of studies that I was looking at. Some, as I talked about before, are sort of frivolous and certainly would never pass the scientific method. Others were far more in-depth. And, you know, for example, there was a 93-country study talking about female politicians and the fact that legislatures that have more women tend to be less corrupt. For example, there's a very rigorous study in Albania on loan officers. Well, why would I cite a study from Albania. Why? Because they took account of every possible factor in comparing female and male loan officers, and literally compared every loan in a 10-year period in the entire country. Well, now you're getting interesting. Now you're telling me that this is not just an Albanian study, because I wouldn't have just included a random study from Albania. But this is actually one of the much more rigorous studies in the book. A lot of data, very thoughtful analysis of why it was, and head-to-head, the female loan officers tended to be able to better assess the risk of people taking loans. And the most successful loans, it turns out, were female loan officers and females borrowing money. But even when it was males borrowing money, the female loan officers still did better. So I'm giving you a long answer to your question about how I wrote Man Down. And I think that in the end, the answer is that it totally depended on the study as to how rigorous it would be. But I think the book is pretty honest about that. I don't think that there's any suggestion in the book that, you know, a study that showed that women get ready to leave the house faster than men do was a survey of 2,000 people. This was not, again, double-blind study that I think would be accepted in any sort of academic journal.
We're talking to Dan Abrams, author of the book Man Down, Proof Beyond a Reasonable Doubt That Women Are Better Cops, Drivers, Gamblers, Spies, World Leaders, Beer Tasters, Hedge Fund Managers, and just about everything else. One of the things that I found kind of amusing was the chapter that said that women make better spies, and one of the reasons for this, as you write, was that men tend to get measurably stupider when they're in the presence of attractive women. So does that make women actually better spies overall?
Well, it's one indicia. So, look, there's other parts to the chapter, but that's one of the hardest ones to prove, right? Which is really successful spies, you don't know exactly how they achieved it. They specifically don't keep records, and they don't keep numbers. So you have to look to other areas to figure out who might make better spies. I was surprised, just anecdotally, that Julia Child was actually a quite successful spy in her day before she became a world-class chef. But I think that there's a number of things, that number of studies that were done. Yes, one of them is that men tend to, quote, spill the beans more often than would women in the presence of a beautiful person of the opposite sex. A study was done by a security firm that basically went online to look at government intelligence employees. They used a picture of a beautiful woman and then requested information from all of these government intelligence employees. And the majority of the men gave some piece of information, while the women did not. And the reverse did not apply when you put up a beautiful man. So the point being that, look, there are various ways that we can look at that might show that men are more at risk if you put a beautiful woman in their presence as spies. Again, is this in and of itself proof beyond a reason? And look, obviously the proof beyond a reasonable doubt in the title of Man Down is, you know, it's tongue-in-cheek. I mean, it's not that I really believe that this particular study demonstrates the proof beyond a reasonable doubt that women are better spies. But I have to tell you, I think that there is a lot in this book that is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And I also think that chapters like the one on women making better spies are at the very least going to make people think about some long-held misconceptions about men and women.
So you're an attorney, and like any good attorney, you're selecting the studies that you want to present. And I got the sense as I was reading this book that you could have written another book making a case that proved exactly the opposite conclusion. For example, let's say women are better multitaskers. Well, then you could make a case for men being better unitaskers.
Well, I don't know about that, but I will tell you the areas that I did find that men were better at. I would not write, and I appreciate your compliment to me, that I would make such a good lawyer that I could make a case for anything. But I will tell you that I believe in this book, which is that I will not be writing a book that shows that men are better. They are better in certain areas. Men are better athletes. Men are stronger. Men are faster. Men tend to read maps better, the studies show. While women are better drivers, men tend to be better parkers, so the studies say. The studies say men tend to treat their friends better than women. Men tend to have better long-distance vision. But when it comes to the – and look, I would describe those as – many of those as, you know, kind of fun and borderline frivolous, as we talked about. When it comes to some of the more important areas like – studying and school and health, I think there is no question that women are surpassing the men in some really important ways. And so I could probably write an article suggesting that men are better at certain things, like as I just laid out to you, but I have to tell you it wouldn't be a particularly persuasive one in terms of trends. Because a lot of these studies have really been done in the last 5 years. And, you know, look, this is also the first time you've been able to look at, with some amount of research in the past, comparing men and women in the workplace. And I think that women are simply surpassing men in a lot of areas, particularly when it comes to a tough economy. Navigating a tough economy was one of the chapters in the book, that women are navigating a tough economy better than are the men. This is serious stuff, and while I will give the men the ability to, you know, to read maps, and there's no question strength and athleticism is not irrelevant in our society, but, you know, head-to-head, if I'm hiring for a lot of these positions, with all other things being equal, you might lean towards the woman.
So, as you say, a lot of these studies have been done in the last 5 years, and many, many more studies will be done in the next 5, 10, and more years, and some of them will contradict these, and so on. And so, I mean, but given that the conclusions of these studies are sound, I have to tell you, my own takeaway from this book was that if you were to look at the bell-shaped curves that represent the performance of each group, the overlap would be far greater than the small areas of differentiation. So, like, let's say in some category you had a 5% difference, which means that 95% of men and women fall into the same range of performance,
yep.
Which basically means that we are far more equal than we are unequal.
Yeah, that's probably true. But, you know, for years, in a lot of these areas, the men have been getting the benefit of the doubt. And my point is that you're right, that in some of these studies, they show that women are 10% better or 3% better or 5% better. But, you know, I still think that's significant. I mean, when you tell me that on average, women doctors tend to spend 10% more time with their patients, they tend to get sued a lot less than do male doctors. Is that relevant if I'm looking through a sea of names on an insurance? You know, everyone gets these insurance lists where you can choose certain doctors who are in your, you know, who are under your insurance. And if you don't know the hospitals involved, a lot of people are just choosing based on names. And, you know, I would argue that the same way that for years, anytime there's an accident, sexist men have said, "Oh, it must have been some woman driver," that it's okay, I think, in this particular area, to actually use some of the studies to say, you know what, all things being equal, maybe I'd prefer a female doctor.
Yeah, but I guess the danger is that people will still be into polarized thinking, which, you know, no matter whether women or men are the losers, that's just a kind of sexism.
Well, I don't know if it's a sexism as much as it is, and again, I would argue that, and this is probably working against my case, but I would argue that men, like myself, tend to think more about things in winning and losing and less about the nuances. And there's no question that the title of this book, you know, Man Down, Proof Beyond a Reasonable Doubt, et cetera, that women are better. I think that may be a very male way to look at it. And I think that's a fair critique. I accept that. And I will own up to it and say, yeah, that's possible that is a very male way to look at anything much less something as important as gender differences. With that said, I think that the point of this book, in part, was to be thought-provoking. And if I had just made it, a title which said something to the effect of the nuances and similarities and differences between the genders, I don't think it would have led to the sort of discussion point that
now,
it has.
I mean, I understand that, but the reality is, I mean, since we're here talking about it and the book is out and it's causing a stir and all that, and that's great, but, you know, I can read a map with the best of them, and I apparently, according to...
But that's anecdotal.
Well,
I mean,
that's like saying
I've never worn a seatbelt and I've never been injured and therefore I don't have to wear a seatbelt. I mean, these are studies. These are not just anecdotes.
No, that's right. But what I guess I'm saying is that there are absolutely first-rate and absolutely horrible women and men, wine tasters and map readers and hammerers and comedians and doctors and virtually everything else. And I guess the question is, why are people and why are Americans in particular so just obsessed with difference?
Well, look, and I think that there's an argument. So the question becomes why, in my view, that question becomes a broader one, which is why compare genders at all? Right? I mean, I didn't commission these studies. I reported on them. And so obviously there are people in a variety of areas. Look, and I think with regard to health, it matters, right? I mean, I think you'd agree that knowing why men are dying younger than women matters. And comparing the fact that women are suffering less heart disease, et cetera, it matters. It's not just gamesmanship and bravado. It becomes actually significant in trying to help prolong life. But, you know, I'm now highlighting my best argument as a lawyer in response to your question. And the answer is that this book is not, it's not, you're not asking me just about the book. You're asking me more broadly about what is the purpose of doing these kinds of studies and therefore reporting on them. And look, and I do think that I would argue that the benefit to society is that in this book is that women tend to be less confident than men. Men tend to be overconfident. I think that's a problem for men, and I think it's a problem for women on both sides. I think that in the workplace, women don't tend to, for example, be as good negotiators. That's another area where men tend to be better. Why? Because the men tend to think that they're better than they are, and the women tend to think they're not as good as they actually are. I think that's a real problem. And I think that women need to recognize that actually they're really good in a lot of areas. And I would hope that some women who are, you know, police officers and bus drivers and a lot of the other areas that are mentioned in this book will see a book like this and they'll say, you know what, I've always wondered about that. Or, you know, that makes me feel good. And I hope that might lead to a change in the confidence gap between men and women.
So that leads to another question. We're talking to Dan Abrams about his book, Man Down. And that question is, why is there so much sexism in the first place? Why are some men so threatened by women, particularly when they start doing traditionally male jobs? And why do they feel like they need to do that?
Yeah, I think/hope that kind of sexism is changing. I think even in the last 20 years that a lot of people would say we're not where we need to be as a society, but that we've come a long way in terms of women CEOs, women political leaders, women as movers and shakers of industry, et cetera. And I think that that's changing the long-held sexist beliefs. Look, I think we're actually behind Europe in that regard, but certainly way ahead of, you know, many countries in other parts of the world. In celebrating female leadership. But again, I think that a book like this, and let's even put aside my book specifically, but books like this, which aren't intended to focus on the negative, but instead, in my view, I mean, look, even the men I'm talking to would concede even typically sexist men concede much of what I say in the book, meaning that they may say, you know what, I still believe, I don't buy the idea that women are better police officers. But the specific evidence that you put forward, I accept and I believe. And I think that's important in having that discussion. I think that that does help us as a society move forward. Because, you know, you asked the question before about it being sexist. Yeah, sure. By saying that one sex gender is better than the other, you could make an argument that that's sexist. But when that one gender has been put down, held down, and repressed for this many years, and you find that, wow, when finally they got their opportunity to go head-to-head with the boys, they not only equaled them, but in many ways they surpassed them. I think that is important in a society where women still are lagging behind men in terms of pay and in terms of getting the most many of the most prestigious jobs in the country.
And I think that still, when, for example, if you were interviewing an employee for a job that women on the average do better, the reality is that some men are going to do that job who you're interviewing would be better qualified,
no question,
or some women would be better qualified, and it would really behoove us not to really take those gender stereotypes into account.
That's absolutely true. There's no question about it. And this goes back to your question earlier about the fact that we're talking in most cases about the margins. I mean, we're talking in most cases about, 3% difference, a 5% difference, maybe a 10% difference, except for getting hit by lightning, which is so stark. But I think in many of the other areas, you're right, that as a result, because the differences are relatively small, it would be foolish to say, I want a particular man or a woman. But that's why I say that something like doctors, where you have, let's say you have no other way to judge who on your insurance. I'm not saying it's a smart way to do it. It would be great. The better way to do it is to find out about the hospitals they work at. The better way to do it is talk to friends who've gone to these doctors. But I guess I'm saying that from my personal perspective, that if I had needed something immediately and didn't have any other piece of information to go to, I'd probably choose the female doctor. That may be a mistake on my part, but based on the research that I saw and based on what's in this book, that's the choice I would make.
I also found myself wondering as I was reading whether all this really boiled down to our species' obsession with mating. In other words, we ascribe all sorts of differences to each other that aren't really there, because most of us are biologically wired to mate with a member of the opposite sex and therefore to organize societies into roles that support reproduction and mating. And in the process, we project all sorts of other polarities and differences that aren't really there at all.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I understand the question. And so therefore what?
So in other words, maybe we tend to look for difference because this thing that we're most obsessed about, namely mating, is a place where there really, really is difference. And because that difference exists and we're so obsessed with it, we project difference onto everything else where it really isn't there.
I don't know. I mean, I think that there are differences. I mean, I think that there are differences. And I think that recognizing those differences is important. But I also think that there are areas, many of the ones that are in this book, where there shouldn't be differences. And the fact that that there are studies that show, I mean, look, that men are behaving differently than women. Let's talk about students for a minute, okay? Because we both agree that that's an important topic, the fact that women are now graduating college at significantly higher rates than men, and they're doing better in college when they're there. Why is that? I can't answer the question as to is there some sort of biological explanation, but I can tell you that the evidence is crystal clear in this regard. That's so much so to the point that Ivy League schools are being accused of affirmative action for men, to let more men into their universities. What happened? How did we get here? Well, look, scientists and researchers speculate about a lot of different things. Women had fewer choices, fewer opportunities. They had to work harder to achieve what they've achieved, et cetera. But those are numbers and statistics that are not just around the edges. I mean, the Department of Education is anticipated by 2016 that 61% of bachelor's degrees, 63% of master's degrees are going to go to women. You know, that's an important societal issue to recognize. And I think it's important for men to step up and to say, you know, as a group, that's a problem. Why do I think it's happened? Look, I have my own personal beliefs based on what I've seen, and I think part of it is that the sort of male as a slacker has been something that's been approved by society, meaning men who are, quote, you know, cool slacker types have been viewed, and you want to go back to mating, have still been viewed as attractive to women. I would hope that wouldn't be the case. I would hope that that wouldn't be viewed as attractive. And as a result, that men would be doing better in school and graduating more from college. I also think that's a result of what we talked about earlier, about the fact that men tend to be overconfident. Oh, you know what? Maybe I don't need a degree, but a woman thinking she does. Well, you know what? The men better stop that, taking that position, because it's going to be a real problem if they do.
Well, there's another take on that, which is that in the last 30 years, and I did an interview with an author about this, who wrote a book which I think was called The Trouble with Boys, and in the last 30 years, the models of how schools, particularly elementary education, but all the way through, the school model has changed, and they've become less free. There's less recess. There's less physical activity. They're more based on a kind of a prison model and a kind of sit in your seat and shut up. And that takes an inordinate toll on boys who basically cannot achieve academically if they're not allowed to really move around. And so that has had an effect on boys' education, which has shown up all the way through.
You know, that's possible. I mean, the beauty of my book and me is that I don't claim to be an expert where I'm not. And I defer to a lot of these researchers, and I'm sure people who you get to speak to on a regular basis, about the whys and the whats. And I've actually been thinking about doing a more in-depth, as you probably know, I also work for ABC News as the legal analyst, and I've been thinking about doing a more in-depth piece for ABC News about the why, about, you know, well, what is it about? Is it difference in brains? Is it et cetera? And that's the sort of thing where, you know, I'll be a student, and I'm just going to be learning from the experts in the area. And it sounds like one of the people you talk to may be one of those people. That's possible that that's an explanation. You know, it kind of makes sense, but there's also a lot of other potential explanations as well.
Well, and I guess that's the thing about this book, is it doesn't pretend to be the final authority on really just about anything, but it's meant to be thought-provoking, and it certainly is. And I think that, you know, each chapter is something that an entire book could be written on, or a much longer essay, and people will take this stuff, run with it, refute it, hold it up to the bright light of science and everything else.
Correct. And I think that, you know, I think that there are a lot of chapters where someone could make an argument to the contrary. I mean, I took a sort of lawyer's position on this, which is to make a case, in effect. You know, it's interesting. I actually had initially thought about calling the book The Case for Women, and I decided that, you know what, a lot of women are going to say, you know what, Dan, thanks, but we don't need you making a case for us. And I decided it would just sounded too condescending, so I decided not to call it that, and instead called it Man Down. But in the end, this is a case. With that said, that's not to suggest that it's a frivolous case. It's not to suggest that I just pulled examples. Again, as I mentioned, some of them are frivolous. But I do think on the whole that there are consistent themes in this book that you walk away from and you will say, you know what, some of the chapters were much more convincing than others. But I will tell you that you walk away, I believe, from this book convinced about certain themes about men and women. You know, the last chapter in this book is about how they actually literally put GPS devices on villagers in a remote area of Mexico to determine how far they would go and how much energy they would expend to find mushrooms. Meaning there was that's what they did in this area of Mexico where they were gathering mushrooms. And they wanted to see how the men and the women, villagers, gathered mushrooms differently. These are people somewhat unaffected by society. And they literally put GPS devices on them. And they found something they found certain themes that were consistent throughout the book about the way that the men and the women did things differently. Meaning the men went to try to find the most, they went much further to find the bigger patches of mushrooms. And the women were more methodical in collecting the mushrooms. And so by the end, while the men and women came back with about as many mushrooms, the men had worked much harder to find them. And I do think that that is reflective of what you find in many areas in this book and in life about the differences between men and women. And the reason that I sort of ended the book with this was because it did seem to me to be reflective of why women are better hedge fund managers, drivers, doctors, investors, loan officers, gamblers, et cetera. The men tended to take the bigger risks, and that at best they ended up kind of in the same spot. So I think that while it's true that isolating, like any good lawyer, right, if someone wants to pick apart my book, a good lawyer on the other side will pick at the weakest argument in the book and say, aha, see, you can't believe any of this book because this particular chapter or these particular chapters are not that persuasive. I would argue that when you look at the totality of the book and you look at the totality of the studies and the research here, there are indisputable themes that do reflect differences between men and women.
And if I was thinking, if anything were to come of this, just on a kind of felt sense, emotional level, maybe men's egos would go down a notch and women's egos would go up a notch and they would start to meet in the middle.
Which I don't think would be such a bad thing.
Exactly.
I think men would start making better decisions, and I think women would feel a bit more confident in their own decisions. And I think that could be a really beneficial thing for society as a whole. You know, I've often said that I think that, you know, a man and a woman working in the same office, even assuming that if the woman is better than the man at doing the job, let's say they're both making $60,000 a year and the boss gives them both a 5% raise, and so they're now at $63,000. You'll often see the man go in and say, I deserve more, and the woman say, thank you. And, you know, that's a real problem, you know, because the man may end up getting more money. And look, and I'm not suggesting, you know, one of the questions I've gotten asked as I've been promoting the book has been, well, then why do I think that women are still making so much less money than men? Is that part of it? Maybe. I think probably one of the key reasons, obviously in addition to sexism, is the fact that there are far more single mothers out there than single fathers, and as a result that they simply can't spend the kind of extra time on their career that some might, because they need to get home to be with their child. And, you know, I think that's a really sort of unspoken thing in our society about why, on the whole, women tend to get paid less than men, in addition to, you know, sexism, negotiating, et cetera.
And even when they're not single mothers, even when they're married mothers, somebody's got to do the work of the family, and that falls way disproportionately on women.
That's a very fair point. Absolutely true.
Another thing that we haven't talked about is stress and how men and women handle stress differently.
I didn't specifically address stress per se in the book, but it's certainly at the margins of a number of the topics with regard to health and sleeping.
And relationships.
And relationships that are in the, you know, it's interesting. One of the first chapter is, you know, intended to be one of the most provocative, which relates to your question, which is that women handle failed relationships better than men. And, you know, they handle them, first and foremost, they handle them differently. How? The studies show clearly that men engage more in substance abuse and women tend to get more depressed as a result of a failed relationship. And I thought that was really interesting, that there is sort of a fundamental difference, because there are few situations in life which are more stressful than a breakup of a long-term marriage or relationship, et cetera. And the fact that men tend to turn more to substance abuse and women tend to get more depressed, I thought was an interesting reflection of some of the differences.
And I think that is one that you could probably chalk up to vast cultural differences, because there are subcultures within the U.S. and there are other cultures in which men are more willing to be expressive and to talk about their feelings and to cry and all that kind of thing. And that's something that basically could be changed through having different education and different expectations.
Yep. And I'll tell you, the reason that the chapter, the reason that I draw the conclusion that men, that women handle failed relationships better is because women tend to have and maintain a circle of friends even after they get into a relationship. Men tend to abandon their group of friends, and so they tend to turn much more to their partner for support. And so when a breakup or a relationship starts to fail, women have a core group of people to turn to do exactly what you're talking about, which is to express their emotions, to talk it out, et cetera, and men tend to be more isolated.
Dan Abrams is author of the book Man Down, Proof Beyond a Reasonable Doubt That Women Are Better Cops, Drivers, Gamblers, Spies, World Leaders, Beer Tasters, Hedge Fund Managers, and just about everything else. Thanks so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
This is a really interesting conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Ulla Peterson. She is the founder and director of the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary. It's elder care and hospice for dogs, horses, and poultry. And they are having their open house this coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday, May 7th and 8th. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mayor Charlotte.
It's good to have you back. Every year or two, we talk about all the amazing work you're doing there and all of these animals that you take care of in this wonderful space. I mean, if I were old, I'd like to come as one of your pets.
Thank you. We'd love to have you, too.
Except I'm not a dog or a horse. But you bring all these unadoptable animals in, and not only do you care for them, but you really show other people how to care for elderly pets and how to think about them.
Yeah. And that's part of our mission. It's twofold: to care for the animals that we can have on the property, and we have about 20 very old dogs. We have 3 very old horses, and we have poultry at all ages, and the oldest one is 19, yeah, now one of our turkeys.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We have an ecologically sound environment and no toxins or pesticides. And then the other part of our mission is really to go beyond our fences and into the community and really help inspire people to make changes in, you know, our cultural norms and, or, you know, so often anyway, that a lot of people have such difficulties dealing with aging and anything that has to do with that, and certainly their pets also. So we try and help people really keep their senior animals in their homes. So the idea is not that we can just take in any old animals, because we are very limited with space and resources, but to really help those animals stay in their homes and stay with their families, and for the families to really learn, too, the joy and the satisfaction and the accomplishment, really, in our own development of caring for senior animals and, you know, maybe family members, too, that come into the same category.
Yeah, I mean, thinking of your pets as family,
yeah,
members, and when they get old, caring for them as you would for your own mother, father, or uncle, or really, yeah, any sick person of any age.
Yes, absolutely.
So this weekend, you're going to have a number of workshops, which I think are very interesting. Kristen Kester is going to be talking about helping traumatized pets.
Yeah.
She's a craniosacral practitioner, a body worker, and when animals are traumatized, and of course a lot of people who adopt animals from shelters or from whatever situation, they're dealing with traumatized animals. That's why they got into the shelter in the first place. They've got some real problems.
Yeah, or their situations have been problematic, and now it shows in the animals, and often they are, it's part of why they're unadoptable, except right now, of course, we're talking about the senior animals. Most of those that come to us, and they come from the shelters or just off the road or wherever they have been mostly discarded, they have all kinds of traumas. It can be from light to very, very severe. And Kristen is going to come out and help us with that and really help people also understand and evaluate what that means and how they can best adjust their homes around that and work with the situation with their traumatized pets. And it could be anything from really abuse. Sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's unintentional. Very chaotic households, very chaotic situations. They could have been on chains their whole lives.
Yeah, out in the sun.
Yeah.
Restrained,
yeah. Yeah,
Mm-hmm. And does she show people how to do body work and
yes.
physical stuff with them?
She does. Of course, this is a short session of an hour, but she will give people specific things that they can take home and practice. You know, some specific ways of maybe holding, of approaching, of being with, so that people get more awareness of how to be a safe guardian for their animals when they're traumatized.
And that's at 1 o'clock on Saturday. And then at 2:30, there's a session on acupuncture for the senior dog with Audrey Shannon, who is a veterinarian. And then on Sunday, there at 1 o'clock, Sunday the 8th of May, there's a discussion with Marianne Shadler, who is a veterinarian, called Lumps and Bumps, which I think is very interesting because I've got a 12-year-old terrier who has all kinds of lumps and bumps, and I keep taking her to the vet, and they're all just normal things that are not problematic, and you worry about them, and you think, yeah. oh my goodness, she's a lumpy dog, but they're just manifestations of age, pretty much.
Yeah, and it's certainly something that should be paid attention to. You know, it's not something that should be ignored. But there are a number of different aspects of it that really should be discussed with your veterinarian, the pros and cons of leaving them on, the pros and cons of taking them off, because there's pros and cons to both situations,
yeah.
and then evaluate which one is the most beneficial for your situation.
And then there's a chiropractic session at 2:30 with Dr. Sherry Gaber.
Yes.
Chiropractic care for the senior dog. And I would imagine that a lot of dogs do eventually get little spinal problems of one kind or another, particularly the long back dogs.
Yeah, and hip problems, and many are kind of genetic because of breeding and so forth. And Sherry is really fantastic. She is so dynamic, and she talks about chiropractic. She is very, very knowledgeable and experienced and loves dogs. And she has done marvels for some of our senior dogs, our little dachshunds, for instance, that can now walk, that couldn't walk before because
Amazing.
Of problems. Also, that chiropractic, I used to be under the impression that chiropractic care was something you did for bones only, like cracking and so forth. But it really affects everything, your organs, your liver, your skin, your allergy problems maybe, and so forth. And so it's a much bigger field than I had ever imagined. So I have learned a lot from that.
It's the spring open house at Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary, which is, it's I guess south of Lone Butte. It's on Highway 14, 3749A, Highway 14 here in Santa Fe. The telephone number down there is 471-5366 and kindredspiritsnm.org. The spring open house is also a collective birthday party for all the dogs, and people can sign a big, big birthday card for the dogs. And let's just very briefly remind people, I mean, tell people that you have also coming up some other workshops that are for people and their pets.
Yeah. We have two here this spring. There is one on May the 28th. That's a Saturday with first aid for senior dogs with Dr. Marianne Shadler, our veterinarian. And we have one on June the 11th. That's a Saturday. That is on nutrition and especially addressing ways of working with the inflammatory process and vaccinations. And that's with Laura Moore of Critters and Me. And both of them are from 10 to 1. There is a fee of $35. And please register early because they tend to get really full.
Ola Peterson, do you have any particular animals? We had that wonderful dog, Salvador, who was the old pit bull who finally passed away, who I'm sure is missed by you and so many others. Any other animals that you want to mention on the air?
Yeah. Well, we have several new new resident animals. We have a new senior horse. His name is Partner. He has had quite a rough life. Come out and meet him. We have a little pug that came from the Santa Fe Animal Shelter last year. Very, very seriously abused and so forth. His name is Oscar.
Ola Peterson, it's time to go. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll see you at the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary May 7th and 8th, Saturday and Sunday.
Thank you. And Mary Charlotte, thank you for giving a voice to the animals.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.